Hi. So this is my first Dragon Con, and this is the first panel that I'm doing, and so you are sort of popping my Dragon Con cherry, so thank you guys. Very excited. My name is Sarah Downey. I'm an attorney at a firm called, not a firm, it's actually a tech company called Abine in Boston, and we're an online privacy company. It is fun. We have like dogs in our office, and I wear PJs to work, and so it's nice. I don't wear this to work, which is unfortunate, but I'm excited to do this here. When I first started at Abine, we had a service where we would remove stuff from the internet, which we don't offer anymore because it's really, really hard, as you'll see from some of the stuff that we talk about. But I do have a lot of experience going out and, in many cases, successfully getting, you know, photos, videos, websites, things taken off the web without actually getting up to the level of legal stuff. Because although I am a lawyer, I'm not practicing where I am. So TJ can talk more about that, and we're sort of... that's where we're going in this talk. In my personal life, I used to have a fetish Q&A podcast, which I used a pseudonym for, but I had some issues with stalking and...
I don't think she can hear you in the back.
Hey, all right. I will lean in and talk more. So I used to have a fetish Q&A podcast. I had some stalkers from that, even though I used a pseudonym, and I had to go and sort of figure out how to do a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about today, like how to find where information is coming from and how you can, what you can do to get it either taken off the web entirely or pushed down so that nobody sees it because it's so low in Google that nobody ever goes beyond the second page. I also enjoy video games and lifting weights and drinking too much alcohol. Oh, cool. Yay.
My name's TJ Myhill. This is not my first Dragon Con. This is not my first panel. And I do wear this to work. And I do own a hip flask. Technically, it's a back pocket flask. So, I am a practicing lawyer. I do litigation primarily, and we work with people on protecting their intellectual property. But to some extent, that means keeping your intellectual property to yourself. So, we can talk about ways to do that. It ain't great. I mean, the answer is, as Sarah said, that there's not a lot of solutions to some of these problems, which is what we're going to talk about. But we can at least talk about things that we can do and you can do, and also things that we can hopefully do to make it better going forward. So.
Also, we have slides here, and we're happy to go through and talk about the stuff that we plan to talk about. But please jump in and interrupt us at any point, because that would be more fun for us too. So yeah, we'll get started. So do you generally know what revenge porn is? Like, do you know, if you know, can you raise your hand? Okay. So for those of you who don't know, revenge porn, sometimes also called sextortion or non-consensual pornography, generally, the situation is you're dating somebody, you're hooking up, and you are recording shit, because that's fun. And then later on, something bad happens. That person turns out to be crazy or revengeful or just an asshole or something. And they decide to put that on the internet. And the internet has no limit of places where that can go. And they can put your name in the file name so that it's pretty clear who's in the photo or the video. They can add all that stuff in comments or on forums when they actually post it. So it can be very, it can be as non-identifiable as like, here's your ass and your face isn't in it, all the way to like, this is where you live and this is your name and here's your social security number and here's a 2-hour video of us boning.
And, you know, a lot of the revenge porn sites, there are sites that do nothing but this. Obviously, there's no shortage of places to put it up, but these sites that specifically cater to this a lot of them will require a Facebook page or some other identifying feature of the person you're uploading. So not only do you have, here's a naked picture of this person and his or her full name, but here's also their personal Facebook page, their email, their parents' email. Go have fun. So it can be very, very harmful to your reputation and to your identity.
Right. And, you know, the fact that everybody basically has a porn production studio in their pocket with smartphones these days, it's like, it's becoming the norm. You know, Anthony Weiner is doing it, and pretty much everybody's doing it. So the potential for these things to end up somewhere you didn't want them to be is very, very high. And this is just a list of a fraction of the sites that exist purely to accept this kind of content. Isn't actually up anymore, but that's probably the most famous one of these sites. It was run by this guy named Hunter Moore, and he's like a first-class douchebag, and just relishes this stuff, and he intentionally pushes people's buttons, and like to the point where a woman who was on his site found him at a concert and stabbed him with a pencil. That is how much people hate this guy. And he's apparently working on a new site, so we all have that to look forward to. But there are a ton of places where you can go, and they gladly accept this content. And it's not just sites that exist to accept it. It's also people just giving it to each other. Like, for example, there's this Best Buy lawsuit that just came out. And basically, it was a girl, her ex-boyfriend posted this stuff on torrent sites and included her name in the file name. And she found it because one of her coworkers at Best Buy, where she actually worked, I missed a huge fact. Her computer was broken, so she took it to Geek Squad at Best Buy. And then they rifled through her hard drive, found this like private porn that she didn't post anywhere, and put it online on these torrent sites with her name in the file name. And then like a couple of weeks later, some other person at Best Buy was like, hey, just so you're aware, like, I saw you boning on the internet with your name. And she was like, oh, shit, sued Best Buy. Because generally, when you go to Best Buy, you don't want them to steal your porn.
Theoretically. That's really the biggest problem in revenge porn now. If you think about it, sure, everybody had a Polaroid back in my day, and you would take a Polaroid, but the worst case scenario, somebody would have a Polaroid of you and they would show it to their buddies, and that'd be it. There's no way to take that Polaroid and give it worldwide attention. But now there is, and not only one place, but hundreds of places to put that Polaroid. So it's just so much easier to disseminate the information and make sure that everyone in the world sees your ass than to just take that one picture and pass it around.
And I know this was like a daytime, not NSFW panel, so it was actually really hard to find safe for work examples. But in each of these cases, these are just pictures of girls with their full names, and you just keep scrolling down and it gets like more and more and more explicit, and there's a whole other page just of comments where people are like critiquing everything from the way they look to like where they live, and it's just a huge amount of slut shaming going on. Of course, some of them actually did upload their own information, it looked like, so more power to them, but in most cases it's someone else without this person's consent. And they're horrified to find this out. And this is really small, but if you can see it, it's essentially the submission form for, I think it's You Got Posted. And it requires the person's full name, location, Facebook page, all of this additional information. So they claim that it's for verification purposes, like they want to make sure that that person is over age, but it's really for shaming purposes. And the title of this talk is Revenge Porn and Other Reputation Destroying Sites. So although we're kind of talking a lot about revenge porn, a lot of the advice and the tips that we're giving apply to any site pretty much where reputation killing stuff can be posted. And so some of these sites have great aspects to them, like Yelp. You know, I use Yelp. It's great. But there are also some really bad stories about Yelp. Competitors coming in and writing totally fake negative reviews. You know, I've even heard that Yelp, the company, really disfavors you if you don't use their advertising, and they'll like delete all of your 5-star reviews. And this is like a major problem that keeps coming up. And I put Blogger on there too, just to drive home the fact that really any crazy person with a web connection can ruin your life or your reputation. Like, that's just kind of the way. If anybody's motivated enough and hates you that much, they can just get a free Blogger account, and Blogger ranks really highly because Google owns it. So that's the unfortunate state that we're in. You know, internet's great, free speech is wonderful, but there are some drawbacks to that. And this is just an example of where this kind of thing happens on Facebook. This isn't revenge porn specifically, but there's reputational issues. A lot of schools, especially big schools, this is CU Boulder, they have these confessions pages where like tens of thousands of students go and they use a SurveyMonkey form and just, it says, tell me all your dirty little secrets. What are you dying to get off your chest? So sometimes people's names come up and it's just this huge public forum. Think of everyone at your university talking about like the embarrassing thing that you did. So the internet has made all of this possible.
And more importantly, Google makes it easy to find all the stuff that the internet's made possible, because somebody searches your name and this is what comes up. And you know, every other site that mentions you in a terrible, terrible way is all over page one.
Does Google take any active steps to prevent this kind of thing?
Well, there's certain tiers of content, right, that they will or won't respond to. Like child porn, they'll be like, oh shit, stop everything, we're getting that off. But then there's a list, right? It goes down the list. So if you just don't like something, or unless there's some legal reason for it to come down and you have a court order, they don't do anything in many cases. There is sort of a hack where if you manage to go and get it removed, whatever it is, from the original source, like let's say it's a Blogger account and somebody wrote a post that's really disparaging, and you finally get them to reason with you and they take it down, Google, you can get Google to take that off of their search results faster than they would just with their algorithms alone. By using, it's called a Google URL removal tool. You basically just say, hey, can you refresh your systems and take this down? But the in sum, Google posts what's out there. They don't take any responsibility for what's out there unless you bring it to their attention with a court order.
And as a practical matter, they don't really have any legal responsibility to pay attention to what's out there or what it is. When you are trying to take some legal action to get these things down or get the information changed or whatever approach you're going to take, then the proper place to take that is the place where the content is, and then when the content isn't there anymore, it won't show up on Google, or you can get it removed through the mm-hmm. you know, the other steps. So it's not something that you deal with Google directly. It's something that you indirectly get it off Google.
I mean, yeah, they're legally not liable for most of the content that people upload. And that's the way it is with most websites. And that's the way that, you know, it's a First Amendment protective thing, because if service providers were liable for the stuff that their users put up, I mean, nobody would want to host anything. So there are pros and cons. Yeah.
I'm just wondering about, like,
what we got?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Microphone.
I'm just wondering about, like, the ethical, I guess, like moral line or whatever, because I'm thinking of sites like Hollaback and like Don't Date Him, where like people mm-hmm. are trying to keep each other safe by like reporting, you know, that someone's exhibiting like, you know, someone's sexually harassing them. It's that, and like that sort of thing can't, like most of the time is not going to be legally documented. So of course, like if someone did actually rape you and you didn't want to report it for whatever reason, but you wanted to tell other people to stay away from them, you know, they could have, you know, claim that you're defaming them or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like what's
the Well, truth is a defense. So obviously, if it's true, there it's fine. But that's the problem. That's why these sites are so hard to deal with, because of the First Amendment rights that come along with that, but also because of the good aspects they do. If you have a Yelp, no one wants to get rid of Yelp. No one really wants to get rid of any of the other the rip-off report or rate my professors or don't date them or Blogger or anything else. Maybe the mugshots.
Mugshots are terrible.
But nobody really wants to get rid of those sites. But the problem is that people can misuse those, just like anything else. People can misuse the good thing to create harm. I could turn around and go on every one of those sites and write a terrible story about Sarah, even though I just met her, and now her reputation is absolutely destroyed. And I have no grounds for it. So that's the problem. The problem is the people who aren't trying to help.
I'm thinking of recently, like last week, Lulu took down a self-published memoir of a rape victim who basically, like, she changed the names, but she described a scene that, like, many people in her real life would recognize the person. And since, you know, she has a real name and she signed it with her real name, like, people basically said that she was defaming the guy. And Lulu took it down even though she had changed all the names. Mm. So, and there was a lot of, you know, blowback and pushback for Lulu because they basically silenced an abuse victim. Like,
the reality there is that they're not a government actor, so the First Amendment doesn't apply to them. So as a private company, they're free to censor things however they want. I mean, if they have a content policy where they say that they won't do that and then they do, there might be an issue there because they're violating their own policy. But generally, if private sites and companies are free to kind of do whatever they want, and if the blowback is big enough from the public, then they might reinstate it, you know, because generally they don't want to piss off the whole public. But that's sort of what it comes down to.
And that's where the statement that ISPs don't have liability is not 100% accurate. They don't have liability as long as they take certain steps to protect themselves. And those steps include taking down content that someone claims is infringing or is defamatory or is harmful in some way. So there's a process, like in the copyright process, we're going to talk about this in detail in a little bit, but there's a DMCA safe harbor. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act has a safe harbor for ISPs. But in order to get that safe harbor, in order to prevent yourself from being sued, you have to respond to a takedown notice by taking the content down and respond to a putback notice by putting it back. And that's not something that the ISP has any say over. I have to do it this way, or I'm going to be opening myself up to legal liability that I otherwise wouldn't have. And so it's not even a decision in some instances. It's just a matter of course for business operations. But certainly it is a policy decision for many companies as to what they do want on their site. And if there's objectionable material, even if it's objectionable to bad people, they may say it's better to not be objectionable than to take sides.
So I've heard from someone who was questionable in the, this is an unrelated topic, but in the Fair Use Act, that there was a lot of takedown notices on YouTube, but also at the same time they didn't have to respond to putback notices from YouTube saying that this is completely covered under the Fair Use Act, and YouTube just completely ignored their requests for, like, at least half a year, if not more. Is there any kind of, like, legal obligation for that, for them to do that?
Well, what happens then is, if they don't actually comply with the DMCA, this is a little off topic, that's okay. If they don't comply with the DMCA processes, and there is, it's not a bright line rule as to how long they have to put things back or take things down. It's a reasonable time, and that's pretty loosey-goosey. But beyond that, if you can say that they didn't act reasonably or they didn't act in the accordance with the law, what that does is it means that I can sue the person who put the content up on YouTube or whatever other ISP site, as well as YouTube, which is a critical distinction, because if I can sue you, there's a limited number of there's a limited amount of recovery I'm going to get out of you unless you have a trust fund somewhere. And if you do, come talk to me after that. But as an individual, suing individuals is not productive. It's a way to get stuff accomplished in an injunction or a takedown or something like that. But it's not a way to really get your costs covered. YouTube, on the other hand, they can pay your bill. So if you can get them involved, it's a much more reasonable suit to bring. So it does open them up to liability and give you that recourse. But in terms of any direct issue for you, are they going to be punished by some greater entity? No.
So in terms of putback, they're not really that interested.
Well, they're interested in the sense that if they don't put it back and you want to sue them, they are liable. But most people don't. So, yes.
So we're going to talk about sort of how to fix it, both non-legal things that you can do and then legal things that you can do. But before we get into those things, we want to bring up the limitations, because this is really tough to do. You can certainly do it, but it all depends on how much time you have. It can be extremely time consuming, how much effort you're willing to put into it. Money is a factor, obviously more so in the legal section that we're going to be talking about. And then the fact that digital files can be copied and copied and copied endlessly and placed anywhere else makes this, that's probably the toughest thing that you have to deal with. It's like, even if you get this video down from this site, who's to say that it's not going to come back on another site, especially if the person posting it is really motivated.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, again, like Crazy X, and they really want this up there, there are so many places that are accepting this content. They can even create their own websites to post this content. So that's really the biggest limitation. And then finally, when you're dealing with the websites themselves or the webmasters, some of them can be really, really tough to find. It can be hard to figure out who's behind a certain website at all, let alone get them to respond to an email or kind of stalk their phone number so that you can call them. I mean, a lot of what you end up doing is kind of privacy invasive in a way, because if your privacy has been violated, you need to violate other people's privacy to figure out who the hell to talk to about this stuff.
And that is probably the biggest issue. I mean, again, when you talk about what happens if you don't comply with this, what happens if I don't have a DMCA agent to tell you where to take these things down? What happens if I don't have my information up? It can create liability for that ISP, but if that ISP is YouTube, then there's a real concern, because YouTube doesn't really want to get sued. It's a big entity. It has lots of money. It doesn't want to get a bad reputation. If the ISP is dump-a-rump, it probably doesn't care. And it's probably not, making a ton of money in its corporate entity, and it's going to be an empty shell, and you could sue it and it's not going to do any good. So the getting the information and getting people to take it down, you talk about whether YouTube is motivated to take down or put back things under the DMCA. These guys really have no concern whatsoever. They're there to put up embarrassing photos. They don't want to take them back down. So it's not in their interest or their business model to be helpful to you. And regardless of what they are, again, you talk about people who put it up on 30 different sites, and sure, I might be angry and put my stuff up on 30 different sites, but 3 months from now, it'll be up on 300 sites, because it's going to be copied and copied again and passed along and moved over here and mirrored there. And at the end of the day, you'll have no idea where your image or your name is being used.
All right. So, how to fix it? You should always start with assessing what you know is already out there, what you suspect might be out there, and documenting it. So, let's say for the sake of example, as I'm going through these, let's say there's a picture of you out there. You're totally naked and your face is in it. So that's what we're trying to get down. So what you could do to start is take that image and do a reverse image search on Google. How many of you know how to do that? Can you raise your hand? Okay, so a fair number of you don't, so I'll explain. Essentially, you can go to Google, and instead of searching by words that you would type in, you can search by images. So you actually upload whatever image you want to search for, and don't worry, it doesn't add it to Google, because that would suck. But you can go and search for it, and it will bring up anywhere that it can find where that exact image or very similar images show up. So even if it's been cropped or the tone has been changed slightly, those will show up. And actually, it, kind of scarily, sometimes it will say, our best guess for this image is, and provide a name. So your name might be coming up with this stuff, which would be really bad. But this will allow you to quickly and easily find out, okay, it's on this number of sites. Right, and then you can sort of attack each one of them individually. So once you find out that it's on those number of sites, you should go to each one, find where it is, take a screenshot that includes the URL, the date, all the additional stuff that you would need to document. This was posted here at this time, and just create a file and start putting these things in this file, and really get a sense of how bad the damage is. You know, it might be just one site, it might be hundreds of them, but you got to document all of this stuff. Then let's say you find it on one particular site and you want to start there. Then you need to find a person at that site to talk to about this. And you very well may not. It may be one that doesn't want to be found. A lot of these sites, they really don't want to be found. Like, you know, Dump-A-Rump, I would be shocked if you could find anybody there. But there still are a couple of tricks. One is a whois search, which basically allows you to see who registered a domain. So let's say it's on Dump-A-Rump. You would go to Google, and right in the search bar, you type whois, one word, www.dumparump.com, and search. And you'll get these whois domain registration results that in many cases will give you the person's full name, phone number, address, you know, wherever they were when they made the purchase of this domain name. So just as a side note, for those of you who care about privacy, if you are ever starting a website, you can have the option to block that stuff when you're buying your site. I would highly recommend doing that. As someone who has been stalked because I did not do that, I would highly recommend doing that. It's only an additional like $2 a year or something.
It's free on what? Hover.
Okay. So use Hover because it's fucking free there.
Except right? Everybody else is using that too. And so when you go Google them, they're not going to, you do your whois and it's going to come up private or it's going to come up some weird place in China half the time. But it is still a good start. You do want to do it and see if you can get an easy result.
Hi.
Is that actually hiding your information, or is that having Hover purchase the domain name and then sublicense it to you, but them maintaining ownership of it and registration of it?
Generally what it is, on the whois registrations anyway, what it comes up as is, you know, whois. And you have to contact them to have them contact the person, you know, and provide the information of who's there. So if you have a, you know, a court order or something like that, they'll tell you who it is, but otherwise you go to them and then they go to the registrant and they're a proxy communicator for the communications that you're sending.
Yeah, it'll say in many cases domains by proxy is a big one. So they act as an intermediary to deliver stuff to you. So that's one way to find out who's behind a site. Another, obviously, is to go hunt around for contact information. But again, in many of these cases, they won't have it listed. But if they have a contact, great. You know, you should definitely try that. Another way is to see if you can get an email from somebody else there and see what the email structure is. Like, is it lastname.firstname@thatdomain? And if it is, then you can kind of guess at what the guy in charge's email might be. You know, like if you find that there's a CEO, you personally email this guy. I mean, it's not his job, but it'll be harder for him to ignore. So those are all tactics. Also phone. If you can find even a general phone number that some person is answering who has nothing to do with this stuff, you're still getting a person on the phone. And like, the more personal you can get with these things, the higher the likelihood that they will feel bad and not just hang up on you or ignore you. Odds of an email being ignored are very high, but you know, if you're calling somebody, it gets lower. And if you show up there in person, even lower. But that could be scary. So we don't want you to go to sketchy places. So yeah, once you find a person's contact information, you just kind of need to ask them nicely. And honestly, like, it goes very, very far if you make a case for yourself eloquently, not crazily. Like, this can be a very emotionally high-strung time for people, but you sort of need to calm yourself and say, hey, I'm a real person, I have a job, this person is out to get me, I would really, really appreciate if you did, I know this isn't your job, but just put in the time to please look into this. It's really harming my life, and most people will feel bad for you, and I mean, I've had dozens of times where that was enough. Like, I talked to the secretary, and she's like, oh, that sucks. Here's the webmaster, and he'll take it down.
And, you know, and on the sites where it's not, that we're talking about the sites where they're not out there intentionally trying to harm you. Obviously, again, some of these revenge porn specific sites are not there to be helpful, and they're not going to listen to your story and feel bad for you, yeah, because they're there to make you feel bad. So yeah, that's going to be less of a response. This is more for the sites that are not intentionally trying to harm you. The ones where someone may have just uploaded your photo mm-hmm. for whatever use. Now, on the other ones, you can go up the chain though. If you can't get somebody at that site to pay attention to you, maybe you can get someone at their ISP or their hosting company to pay attention to you and say, look, this is harming me. They've got this content that's harming me, and I plan to take some legal action if we can't get this done, but it's really just, I need this help. Can you help me out? See if you can work with somebody who's not the jackass running the revenge porn site that might take some sympathy on you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's essentially the jackass running the revenge porn site is at this level. Then you have their hosting company, or maybe somebody who's higher up than they are at their same company. So then you have the host. Then you have Google and search engines and things that index the content. And then you have the court system,
right,
which we'll get to. But so there are different layers that you can try. And I should also note that in many cases, contacting a real person can backfire if that person is the one who's perpetuating this content. If they want to get a rise out of you, and then it demonstrates that it's working, that might have the reverse effect. So you got to sort of use your judgment there. I'm actually just going to skip gaming Google for a second and move down to the URL removal. So let's say that you did contact a real person, you wrote a letter, you talked to them, whatever, and they took down the content. For a while, it'll still show up in Google's search results, which in many cases is the thing that people really care about. Like, that's the reason you care, is because it shows up with your name in Google. So Google will naturally filter that stuff out if it doesn't exist anymore, but there's a time period where it's still there. So you can actually go into Google, and I mentioned this before, but there's a page, all you have to do is Google URL removal tool, and you can submit the URL that you want taken out of search results and kind of submit it. It's really easy. It takes like 2 minutes, and then they will take that out of results. It's an automated thing. It usually happens within 2 to 4 days. So your question is, what if you contact the whatever site is hosting the content, and they say they're going to take it down, but then they don't for a while? Then you just have to be super persistent. It's on them, you know, like they just forgot, or they're being lazy. And so part of being successful here means you have to be annoying. Like, you have to pester them a lot, because it'll make their lives easier if you go away. And if they take down the content and that makes their lives easier because you go away, then you both win. So that, you just have to keep at it.
I mean, the next recourse is the next slide, where we get into the legal things. If they don't do it, you have your legal options, but those options are way more time consuming and expensive than making a couple extra phone calls. So take that step first.
I was wondering what, I know that a good percentage of these problems also encrypted shadow copy.
Yeah. Well, the question was, what do we recommend for the average person to, like security tools, privacy tools, et cetera, to protect your devices from being hacked and this content being taken remotely?
Yeah, not somebody with like a $3,000 computer, not like a huge computer list or anything,
just
the average.
Yeah. LastPass. So, any type of quality password manager like LastPass, 1Pass, I think Passlock is a new one, RoboForm, we make one, shameless plug, at abine.com. It's called Mask Me, and everything is encrypted locally on your own device. We don't even have the password. So yes, password managers are one thing. VPNs, virtual private networks, are another. Yes, when possible, yes, two-factor authentication. Yeah, VPNs, for example, if any of you have connected to the Wi-Fi anywhere in this con at all, you're exposing yourself to a lot of risk, basically, just by connecting. Yeah, actually, right behind us.
Here you go. These are credentials that we, this is what we've actually captured off our Wi-Fi. In ArcNet, yes, this is completely passive, by the way. We're not transmitting anything. And let's see.
How many people's bank accounts?
Not enough.
This is FireSheet. These are Sidejack. We can actually take over their Facebook page. You talk about revenge porn. You actually just post the pictures right to their Facebook page. So yeah, this is heinous. Now this is completely passive. You would never. There's no way to detect that we're doing this. So use VPNs, use encrypted protocols, use HTTPS, use two-factor authentication.
Yeah, and some VPNs are free. Personally, the couple that I like are Foxy Proxy is a good one. Private Wi-Fi has a really easy user interface, so you can actually pick like what server you want to use. So right now, I'm in Amsterdam, I believe. So like my IP looks like it's in Amsterdam, and people. It's not completely perfect. It's not going to stop the NSA. It's a whole other issue.
That's Saturday at 4.
But, yeah, and then, of course, like, use antivirus. I mean, again, they're not perfect, but Kaspersky is good, Sophos. Security guy, do you have any other suggestions?
I'm going to be the security. I'm a political consultant.
Okay.
No, seriously, like,
yeah, put a password on your phone or a screen lock. Seriously. Yes, yeah.
I've done.
I don't have a password on my phone.
Yeah, right.
What?
I've done West Virginia and been harassed for that. I've done candidates all over the Southeast and harassed for that.
So, I use Chrome. I use Tor when it's useful.
Mm-hmm.
HTTPS everywhere. LastPass. Anything I sign up for, I use either a dummy email account. Or I use my personal one and then create a ridiculous 30-character-long complex password.
Mm-hmm.
Except they just introduced like 40 and 50-character password cracking.
I mean, the reality is...
Yeah, Ars Technica. That was scary.
The goal is not to prevent hacking. You are going to get hacked. The goal is to make you difficult to hack.
Right.
It's the difference
the more
between having...
Target.
Don't be the low-hanging fruit. I'm the low-hanging fruit.
An 8-inch wall... versus a white picket fence versus Fort Knox. I don't need to be Fort Knox. I don't make any money. I don't need to be Fort Knox. But the whole reason I came is because some of my clients need to learn some of this shit.
Yeah. You're not a political consultant for Anthony Weiner, are you? Because he needs to maybe come here.
Yeah.
Also, stop texting his junk. That's just my advice.
I thought it was kind of hot. Whatever. We're going to get to that.
Here's the best advice. Don't have your porn taken of you. Stay the fuck off the internet and live in a cardboard box. Yeah. That's. Or the other alternative is we all just take naked pictures of ourselves and put them right up.
Yeah, so nobody will care.
Then it's not. Yeah.
Alternatively, you can just tag a bunch of other naked photos with your name.
Yeah. Just like jam the radar. Don't stay off the radar.
Jamie Heineman that's been photoshopped.
Hey, you.
I guess it's me now. I just wanted to add, if you think HTTPS is secure, you're wrong. There was a tool released at either Black Hat or DEF CON 2 or 3 weeks ago that through padding of traffic, if I middleman you and pad your traffic on an SSL connection, I'm able to actually go back later and decrypt all the packets that I captured. I also want to say SSH tunnels are awesome because you can make your server go from one country to another country to another country. SSH chains or proxy chains is a really cool tool to look into. That's all.
Wait. Awesome. Yes.
I got more to answer this question for someone with like a $300
tier. Sure.
If you've got something like pictures of yourself or of your ex or whoever that you want to actually keep safe, TrueCrypt is free, and you can make a very small shadow encrypted partition that no one will know or know how to get to or be able to read without the tool and a password. Very easy.
Yes.
Many guides for it.
Yep. I actually use TrueCrypt, so vouch. Okay, yes, so we're getting back to this. Now, let's say that you've done everything you can without using legal force and you can't get it down. The next best thing is to bury it. And there are some really surprisingly easy and free things that you can do to push things off to page 3, 4, and beyond. Because, you know, studies show most people never go beyond page 1, some into page 2 if you're really dedicated, but most people don't. So the easiest thing you can do is write up a profile about yourself, something that's positive, highlight where you work and your skills and other things that you're 100% okay with being out there. Copy that little blurb and just open accounts on some of the biggest like social networking sites that are all free. So LinkedIn, Pinterest, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, Yahoo has a profile thing that you can do. Any of them. I wrote a blog post somewhere where I list like 50 of them. But just do take out accounts there, take that little blurb that you wrote, copy and paste that into all of them, and then link all of them to each other, and they will all be at the top of Google. It's just the way that the search algorithm works. That these sites have so many users, they're so popular, they will all be up there. And when you interlink them, you increase that even more. So you can really bury a lot of stuff way, way down. And to make sure that things are buried, you should really become a pro at Googling yourself. So Google not only your name, but variations of your name, the state that you grew up in, the state where you work now, the industry you work in, your job title. Google, use quotes when you Google things. Google your email address, the one that you put out on your resume, for example. That can bring up a whole ton of shit, like forum posts that you didn't realize are totally visible now and lots of other things. And create a Google alert on a bunch of this stuff so that you'll be emailed every time a new thing comes up, revenge porn or otherwise. So you can really mess with Google and thus mess with anybody who's Googling you.
I've got a question. I've got a pretty rare surname, so I've always been a little self-conscious and stuff like that. But people have really common names. Do they get to hide in the noise?
Yes.
Or
yeah.
Is that
kind
of playing?
But that's the problem is the reputation issue really becomes an issue not when someone's just randomly Googling John Smith hoping to see some schlong. The problem becomes when I'm Googling you specifically for some reason, like I want to hire you for a job, or you know, I'm considering you for some other position or any legitimate thing that you want, and I'm trying to make sure that you're qualified for, and I find schlong. So that's the problem. It's not that it's just out there, and that can be an issue for people with. I have a fairly unique last name too, and you Google me, you'll find, you know, stuff that I put on the internet in 1992 still comes up. So it's there, and it's gonna be there, and it's not gonna get lost in the noise. But you can make your own noise. You know, if you SEO yourself enough, and SEOing yourself is cheaper than the legal approach. If you can SEO yourself enough to shove the stuff you don't want me to find as your employer off page one or page two, I'm not going to go to page 15 and make sure that you're not there. But I am going to be really interested in what I see on page one.
So in terms of John Smith's Wing Wang, how do you tell the difference between John Smith A and John Smith, like, ZA?
Well, if it's just up there by name, maybe I don't. But, you know, if it's the question is the picture from here down or from here down? Because I know what the guy I'm trying to hire for the job looks like. And if I can see his face, I can tell whether it's him or not. So it's that's part of the question that was asked earlier about assess the damage. If the damage is that there's a close up of your junk on the internet, I'm probably not going to be asking to see that in a job interview to make sure it's you.
Yeah.
But if there's a full body shot of you on the internet, then I'm probably going to be able to tell that, oh, that's the guy I was just talking to this morning.
That's why two big takeaways that you should get from this talk are, number one, if you're going to send pictures of your junk, don't include your face. It might not be so sexy to just be like, hey, here's my, you know, severed body part without my face. Because you need,
depends,
like,
on who you're dating.
Yeah. Yeah. But number two is, if you're going to send it, take it yourself. Because if you take it yourself, like a selfie or like a mirror shot or any number of like awkward things that we all do, then you have copyright protection in that. Mm-hmm. You are the copyright holder, which means that you can do things like DMCA takedowns, where you can, What? Oh, right. Make sure when you take a photo that you are not accidentally recording additional details like your GPS location, mm-hmm. latitude and longitude. I'm not joking. No, this stuff is by default,
right,
with any smartphone. It's
and
like
most people don't turn it off.
Like somebody tweeted a picture on Twitter the other day and he was like, nobody's going to find out where I am. And I downloaded it, like saved it, looked at the EXIF data, got longitude and latitude. Then you can go to Google Maps, like cross-reference. And I was like, actually, you're right here. So you should. Very good advice.
Right. But the copyright issue, because we did just get to that. You own copyrights in photos that you take. And if there is a picture that you have taken of you, you can use the DMCA process, or when we get to the next slide, if we get to the next slide, you can use a copyright lawsuit. You can't bring a copyright lawsuit or make a DMCA takedown request of a picture that I take of you, because I own the copyright in that, and you don't. Right.
Right.
So, now. Illegitimate DMCA takedowns is a whole different issue. We need another hour.
Yeah. So but just to like very, very...
That's the critical element.
Yeah, I just want to kill this slide really quickly. 18 USC 2257 is a law essentially saying that anybody who hosts like porn or pornography of any kind essentially needs to have papers on you verifying that you, the model, are over 18. So that can be a workaround. If somebody posted porn of you and it's amateur stuff that you never intended to go up there, they don't have papers, you know, proving that you're over 18. So that's one way of going about sort of weaseling this out. I already talked about monitoring and repeating with things like Google Alerts. Last note, beware of takedown services in quotes. A lot of these sketchball sites that post the stuff have other sister sites that you have to pay them to remove it. It's an extortion model. I have no idea how it's still legal. A lot of like mugshot sites do this. They'll be like bustedmugshots.com, like you got arrested, and maybe it was a totally false arrest and it was expunged from your record, but it's still up there. And then they'll be like, oh, by the way, give us $700 and we'll take it down. Like, fuck that. Don't give those people money. That's bullshit. All right, legal.
Well, here's the problem. Don't give those people money. But when you come to me, it's going to cost you a shit ton more than $700. So maybe it's worth it. I mean, that's the reality. That this slide is probably the most effective way to get rid of these things. But it is not a cheap process. Any one of these things is expensive, but any one of these things that we then have to do 47 times to each unique site that's got your picture on it, it can really add up. So it is a good resource, and it is a good option, but it's not perfect. Nothing is. But the filing a police report, I'm going to get to that at the end because there's some issues with that. Copyright suit. If the DMCA takedown doesn't work, or they're not a site that's giving you a DMCA agent because it's dump-a-rump and they don't care about their liability, then you bring a copyright suit. But again, you can only do that if you're the copyright owner and if the content, the work is registered with the copyright office. So in order to actually sue on your naked pictures, you have to send your naked pictures to the Library of Congress and put them out in the public domain. Now, theoretically, no one's ever going to go look at them, and so you can still sue. But yes, you've got to register your work with the Copyright Office to sue on that copyright. And so I have a copyright in this naked picture of myself. You know, maybe fine if you're an art model and that's what you do and these are your images and you just don't like the fact that they're being used on someone else's site without your consent. But if it's the stuff you took with your boyfriend in your weekend in Jamaica, you may not want to send it to the Library of Congress. It's up to you. Invasion of privacy, rights of publicity. Do we have? Oh, it's okay.
More of a comment. I heard on, I know it was a news station, I want to say maybe 3 months ago, that the extortion sites were made illegal.
No. There are several sites that are, excuse me, several states that are trying to take some action against this. Florida tried to pass a law. It died on the vine. It never got out of the legislature. It just died on their calendar. California is pushing to get one passed. It has not yet passed. Will it pass? Who knows? It may also die out, but it is being pushed. But those are the only two states that are really taking an aggressive action on it. And so far, it has not taken any account. So that's why filing a police report can be a little tricky, because there's really no law against it. The law against putting a picture up of someone, really, that goes to copyright and nothing else. There's no criminal law of putting a picture up of someone. There's nothing that makes that illegal. Harassing someone is illegal, and if you can say that this rises to the level of harassment or you're being harassed, maybe there's a police report to file. There are other things, that other laws that may be in place in your jurisdiction. Each state obviously has different laws that may allow you to bring a report and take some police action on this, which is helpful. The reason people are trying to pass a law to make it a criminal action is, if it's a civil issue or a copyright issue, you have to come hire me and pay me to do the work for you. If it's a criminal act, you go to the police, the police go to the DA, and the DA does all the legal work for you, and you, the victim, don't have to pay out of pocket for that work. Thank you. There's a question in the back.
Okay.
Oh, question in the front.
Real quick, can you just talk for a second about registering for copyright and putting your stuff in the Library of Congress?
Sure. What you do to register for copyright is you go to copyright.gov and you fill out a little one-page form and you send that in along with $35 and the work that you're registering. Now, the work that you're registering can be a compilation. You can put a photo album together of all the photos you want to protect, for example. If that's what you're trying to protect, yes. And send that in. But what do we? Oh, well, there you go. Sunday at 11:30, we'll be covering Copyright 101, how to do that. But I've just saved you all an hour. You don't have to go to Courtney's panel anymore. But you register it, you send in the work, and, you know, honestly, the work just goes in a electronic file somewhere, and it's not something that I can pull up online and view the entire Library of Congress, because otherwise every best-selling novel that they got copyright for, I'd just be able to go read for free, and I wouldn't have to buy it off Amazon. But so it's not something that people can just search and get, but it is out there, and it is something that now the government has a whole file of naked pictures of you.
Yeah, won't that be released after the copyright ends on it? How is that, like 120 years, or after the death of the author?
I mean, yeah, you'd probably be dead.
Yeah,
right?
It will be 20 years past. Right.
It's ridiculous.
At that point, your reputation. But
you have kids.
Yeah, true. It's true. But well, I mean, legally, reputation is something that can't be. You can't go after it after you're dead. Like, somebody can't go and push that on your behalf as a dead person.
Well, I think that what I mean is, if you register your junk to the Library of Congress and after a year, 20 years after you die, then you... anyhow,
yes,
my
it
real
does
question...
fall into the public domain. But you would have the world's first public domain junk. But it is again, still unlikely that anyone's going to find it and use it.
Okay, I think my real question was about the idea of the right to someone's liking, and those websites that are like, you've named a couple, libelous website, are making money out of their website, so don't we have a legal standing on, you're making money out of my liking, therefore
right.
You can't do that, you don't have a release?
That's where we get to, the invasion of privacy, invasion on seclusion, and your right of publicity. Rights of privacy and rights of publicity are basically two sides of the same coin. Rights of privacy are, you don't have a right to use my image or my information without my consent. Rights of publicity are, you don't have the right to make money off my image or my information without my consent. I'm the one that gets to make money off of it. Those are tricky animals, though, because they're all state law. There is no federal right of publicity or anything that applies nationwide. The rights in each state vary greatly. Some states give you a significantly significant protection over your image or your likeness. Some states couldn't give a rat's ass. And it really comes down to, do you have a lot of famous people in your state? California and New York have great rights of publicity. Georgia has a pretty good one because we have Martin Luther King. Tennessee has the best rights of publicity in the entire world because they really love them some Elvis. But it really depends on your state's law and what rights you are provided. And then the question is it your state's law or the state's law where the website is that factors into that? So rights of privacy and rights of publicity may be a fantastic sword in this instance, or they may be a pointy little toothpick, and there's just no way of knowing until... Is it weird that my mom keeps calling me during a revenge porn panel? I lost my train of thought, but it's a good thing, but it's a good thing, but it's not necessarily a great thing, and it really does depend on your state.
What are your options legally if the person has decided to host this stuff overseas?
Back to pushing it down on Google. I mean, as a practical matter, there are ways to sue here and get judgments that would be effective over that content. But again, enforcing that can be very tricky. If the site is hosted overseas, but there's something that you can get to here. Again, this is where we get to the idea of, here's the bad guy's skeezy website, here's where the bad guy's skeezy website's hosted, here's where that hosting company is actually owned, here's where that hosting company gets on Google and Bing and whatever exists out there. And that's, you kind of need to go up the chain so you can get someone to pay attention to you. But it is still possible, but it's much harder.
I wanted to go back and ask the question about whether it depends on whether you're in state or like your state or their state, basically. Like, I was wondering if there's any legal precedent either way, or is it just like divided because it's state to like...
There is, but it really depends on it's the facts of your case and the facts of what's out there and the facts of what's being done, because there's something called conflicts of laws, and there's a whole law school class on conflicts of law, but it's you don't want to know it. But what it boils down to is, depending on the facts, sometimes you have to sue someone where they are, sometimes you can sue them where the harm occurred, which is where you are, or at least you can argue that it is, and sometimes you can sue them in some third place. But it just all boils down to the facts of your case, who did what, who they are, where they are, and how they did it. So talk to your lawyer, and they'll tell you where you can sue.
So really quickly, if you can, don't put your face in whatever homemade porn you're making. Take it yourself so that you can potentially register the copyright or go get it taken down based on that. There are a couple of apps. I mean, these are not bulletproof in any sense. I mean, Snapchat, for example, lets you send a picture that has a life expectancy where it lasts only a couple of seconds. Somebody can still take a screenshot of it, but these things still, I mean, Wickr is actually encrypted texting, and you can send photos as well. But yes, selfies, no, don't have somebody else take the picture for you. And quickly, some really helpful resources. There are organizations devoted just to this particular issue. They have petitions that you can sign. They're working. I mean, if the law in California is any indication, things look pretty positive for that. And there are whole really good guides, tips to getting things taken down. The one on the bottom is a guide that I wrote about, you know, how to game Google and do a lot of the things that I was telling you about. Sorry, the URL is crappily long, but you can Google it and find it.
By the way, one thing I should point out, because we did talk about the registration issue, you don't have to have a registered copyright. You just have to be the copyright owner to do a DMCA takedown notice. It's just that if they ignore you and you have to follow it up with a copyright suit, then that copyright suit, you do have to be registered. It's the keys to the courthouse door. So until you get to the courthouse, you don't have to have it registered.
Last dumb question for a while. Is it more male or female that are generally the ones that are posting?
Female are the victims. Males are the ones posting it.
How often? Like percentage?
It's like...
I would say it's not even 20. But I mean, there are certainly men on these sites. If you go to these sites, you can see, you know, men on the sites who probably don't want to necessarily be up there. Although I guess it just depends on how cold it was in the picture.
A lot of it's like, yeah, a lot of it comes down to like cultural, just the way that people deal with sex in our culture. And it's like, if a guy is out there with his dick, it's like he can still run for mayor of New York, you know. But if
at least once.
But like for women, I mean, it's generally like we treat it as a more humiliating and degrading thing, which is it's a problem. Some women, like the one who's actually been the poster child for this whole movement, her name is Holly Jacobs, and she just came out, and she's like, she's kind of taking the bullet for everybody else and saying like, yes, my pictures are out there. My crazy ex-boyfriend is an asshole, but I need to tell this story in order to get this stuff moved through Congress, because this is happening on an unprecedented scale to plenty of people.
I just had a question. How do you determine copyright if it's a consensual video?
Who
pressed play?
Yeah.
Well, if it's, you know, one person's camera, but the other person pressed play, I mean, what happens there?
It's not ownership of the camera. It is the photographer.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably, I guess in that instance, the bookshelf or nightstand would be the photographer. But whoever pushed play would be make the claim. Let them argue against it.
Yeah.
You have someone there, attorney, please.
Yeah, I think we had a question over here.
You pushed play.
Right.
You should do IKEA.
There you go.
You train your cat to push play?
Sure.
All right.
I was just going to ask, what about sites that actually have a good reputation for adult work, where you do have to, you use an alias, but you do have to submit your personal information for payment purposes, even if you took measures to safeguard your identity, you know, as far as not posting your face and, you know, hoo-hoo in one, in one shot. Are those sites generally pretty reasonable about not passing that information along, or, have there been cases where that's come up?
That sounds like you're selling questions.
Well, I mean, yeah, I know. It really depends. I'm doing a panel at 7 o'clock about NIM rights and pseudonyms and things of that nature, but it depends. Like, if it's a community site where anybody can go and take the pictures and download them and put them somewhere else and connect the dots, I mean, you're not really safe. You know, if it's behind a membership wall or a paywall or something, you might be a little bit more safe. But any file can be saved, copied, mirrored, posted with other info. And it's kind of, that's why you have to take these measures yourself at the beginning, like not putting your face in it or using artful shadows. Yeah, that is here in a couple hours. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.